Don't lie for me.
What's been happening is that the extraction teams have been bringing back the infected with the uninfected. So we've embedded a doctor with each team to do the testing in the field, because one slip up could bring the whole compound down. So the doctor's job, your job, is to make sure that doesn't happen.
There are no quotes for this movie. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. And when I say very depths, I'm not using hyperbole this week, guys. My name is Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Even the zombies are bad actors, Dunaway.
Oh, hi. The movie this week suggested that we just think of it as a game. So I downloaded the demo, played YouTube to watch Game Hour. Player one is ready. Let's go. Move.
Nice. Also, the internet.
Did he cut out a little bit?
Yeah, the internet cut him out just a tiny bit. Just a little bit.
Really?
Just a tiny bit.
The movie this week suggested that I just think of this as a game. So I downloaded a demo, play 15 minutes, and went to YouTube to watch Game Theory for an hour. Player one is ready. Let's move.
There you go.
Is that any better?
Yeah, no, it's way better.
Time, actually,
yeah, that was like if the first patch for the video game you're talking about, it fixed the well done.
Release day patch right there.
Also with us, Randy, more like Theon Jailjoy Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian, we're glad you're here.
Right.
Now let me just show you what we've learned by studying these types of people. We've classified them into five stages. At stage one, they look and act just like you and me. They run for local office and put their name everywhere. At stage two, they start to look towards city and county positions, and they become more aggressive. At stage three, they set their sights on the state house and become very dangerous. They lose all of their intellect. Now, here's the interesting stage. Stage four, philandering. Stage four politicians will have sex with anyone. You be careful. Then there's stage five.
Yeah.
All right. Stage five. Now you stay on that yellow line, and I'm going to show you something truly terrifying. A presidential candidate.
Rip from today's headlines.
I was going to say those exact words.
Yeah, well done. Also, and finally, with us, Brian, going to draw a blood heart on your mask when you die, Ibit.
What shows I love you. So we know that their little mosquito device is going to tell them whether or not someone is infected. Right, red, they're okay. Black, it's no way, or whatever their crappy rhyme was. But there are a couple other results on that device that you only find in the director's cut of Pandemic. Blue means that you're about to get hit by a magic stealth taxi. Green means that despite being able to fend off hundreds of zombies in the street and in a school, you're going to nearly be wiped out by a lone zombie in a Japanese electronics store. And if your test result looks like the sigil of House Greyjoy, well, you're just plain screwed.
Nicely done.
Grenade.
All right. The movie's Pandemic. And I can say this right up top without much hesitation. It is worse than that awful
retrograde.
It's worse. This isn't me making this up or stretching the truth or going too far. It is worse than Retrograde. So, dear listeners, if you're listening to us right now and you're going, man, I forgot to catch up on the movie. I'll have to watch it after I listen to this episode. Don't watch this movie. This is a bad, bad piece of shit movie.
Yeah. Play Left 4 Dead. Same thing.
Yeah, kind of, except better and more cohesive.
Down to the witch.
Yeah.
It would be interesting for there to be like something better for people to watch and then listen to this episode as though it's about that thing.
Sure. I don't know what to
watch. Crossroads.
Yeah.
There you go.
Nailed it. Yeah. Nailed it. I had no idea, obviously, going into this thing, what we were going to get. It's Halloween month. We're watching movies that are supposed to be scary or whatever, or Halloween scary. Theme.
It had some frights.
Jump scares.
It had one that got me.
Level
was that
level
the
five.
Turn on the lights and the things right behind her kind of thing.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, that was it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the weird night vision thing kind of was okay, freaky. Except I can't take Missy Pyle's face seriously, no matter what she's in. So, and I
just see the woman from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the mom, the overachiever mom.
Yeah, just grinning back there in her pantsuit, just like.
Yes.
I think we could actually make that the theme of our show. I couldn't take this and fill in the blank seriously because fill in the blank. That's the theme of the show.
No, absolutely. It's just bad. All right. So Scott Fletcher did a thing. He'll explain, and then maybe this will make more sense.
Pandemic is set in the near future, where a virus of epic proportions has taken over the planet. There are more infected than uninfected, and humanity is losing its grip on survival. Its only hope is finding a cure and keeping the infected contained.
All right. I guess that's the plot. I suppose
that's what it says in my, at least that's what it says in my humble bundle.
Right. Yeah, but what's the genre? What's the specific mechanics here in this video game? Oh, that's right. It's not. It's a freaking stupid movie. And here's the thing. Like it's a disservice to say, go play Left 4 Dead and not this because it's the same thing. Left 4 Dead is a masterpiece compared to this.
Oh, it absolutely is.
This is so
bad.
And
what's funny is Left 4 Dead falls on a lot of the same tropes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the band of people kind of gathered together. Oh, let's go into an enclosed area. Let's draw attention to ourselves when, you know, there are zombies around and stuff like that. But Left 4 Dead, I mean, as a game, it does it so much better. And this movie tries to be that first person shooter though.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and it kept, and the biggest problem with it is I kept thinking, oh, it's going to be like that hardcore Harry or Henry or whatever it is, where it's just first person the entire time, and then it's going to play out kind of like Crank or something and just be this visceral whatever. And I was sort of in. I'm like, all right, I'm cool with this idea. And then it would change faces. You're like, no, wait, who's looking at who now? Why is it first person all the time? And when is it not first person? And it was,
how is Lieutenant Brass? How am I able to see? How is Lieutenant Brass looking at me with a video when he doesn't have one of these helmets on, or like a video lapel, or something embedded in his forehead or something?
And it started out really good. I mean, especially compared to like recent films, for whatever reason we've seen have started out really bad, like the Addams Family opening titles, like where you're like, oh no, this movie might stink. This movie starts out with like found footage from an iPhone. And it was really pleasant. I was enjoying how it made me stop and go, wait a minute, why am I not hearing anything? Oh wow, why is the screen frozen? Like is the movie okay? Is my TV okay? Like that was really actually kind of cool and different.
Yeah.
And then they didn't stick with it. Why didn't they stick with it?
I know. And it was the only time that I actually believe the first person effect worked. Like, it's the only time in the movie where it didn't distract me or piss me off or drive me nuts.
Right. Oh, there were so many times where, you know, they're in the front of the ambulance, and Greyjoy is driving, Alfie Allen is driving, and she's looking at him, but her head is turned within her helmet. Her helmet's still looking forward, but her head is turned. And for whatever reason, every time it was like that, it just took me right out of the movie. And I said, no, they wouldn't see that. They would see what's straight ahead. The other time it really failed was when they go into the school, into the gymnasium, and everybody's looking at all the stuff going on the floor. You would go into that room and you'd be like, oh my God, look at all the stuff going on the floor. But the first 2 minutes of it, it's setting it up to be this big surprise scare. And it's them looking at each other. If they were looking at each other through kind of the first person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes you out. You're right. It takes you out. Kind of like when you're watching a movie and they have like a video screen showing something that happened elsewhere. And it's like, no one was filming that. How do you have that scene for scene video footage of something that didn't happen anywhere? It'll take.
Yeah, you either stick to your thing. You either stick to your thing or you freaking don't.
Yes.
And they didn't do it.
I actually have a solution to this, and I don't understand how no one making this film thought of this. So it's set in the near future, right? This movie takes place next year. With the happy family on their vacation out in the desert, unwrapping a gift that is a drone video recorder.
A little drone camera. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then, the
military could easily have drone cameras that they go along with them.
And so once you establish that, I will forget about it as a viewer. Mm-hmm. I will just accept that there is a camera floating around filming whatever this character is experiencing, and I'm fine.
So you are you telling me that this was supposed to, I mean, do you think the filmmaker, and I use that term lightly, do you think the filmmaker meant this to seem like, oh, we gathered all this footage from their suit cams later, combined it with the bus.
Yeah. Okay. And assembled it, put in Final Cut Pro so we could find out what really happened to them.
See, now the problem with that is I would, even as much as it annoyed me, I'd be okay with that if they were consistent with that. But there were parts of the movie, and because they were less than the first person shots, it made them stand out more to me. But there were parts in the movie where it was just film normal. Like, here's people walking around, nobody's point of view.
You need to sell out.
Yeah.
You need to sell out if you're going to do it.
Yeah, you got to go all in, or don't do it at all, or it doesn't work, or it's kind of broken, or whatever. Then all your audio is shit because everyone's talking in these masks and it sounds overdubbed and quiet. I've never had Netflix so cranked up in my life. I had to turn that thing up so loud until somebody would yell and scream and I'd have to turn it down. Like, the audio was way off.
I didn't even realize, you're right, I turned this way up. I didn't even think of
it. Yeah, you had to, because you couldn't hear anything anybody said. They were terrible. So they're
not to mention the awkwardness of having all the characters looking straight at the viewer, which really, I don't know, it breaks the fourth wall for me.
Yeah.
And it constantly reminds me that I'm watching a movie. I don't get enveloped in the story when there's stuff like that going on.
I know, you feel like they may as well be saying to you, look at me,
It's
like,
supposed to, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to make you feel like you're a part of the story. It's supposed to be, really, it's supposed to be a video game come to life. But they don't do it consistently enough that I bought in. But it's just distracting.
Also, a video game, I can tell where I'm shooting and I can see shit.
This movie would have been better with a heads-up display, right?
Yeah. Needed a HUD.
We all agree.
Didn't Doom
like,
do this already?
Kind of, except Doom only saved that. They saved their little first-person shot for like five minutes near the end of the film. This thing was trying the entire... Anytime a gun was out, it was like a first-person thing. And I don't know. There's no... The trivia is nothing on this movie, so I don't know if the filmmakers are sitting around going, we should make like a shooter game and make a whole movie kind of like that. But there is one hint. The one piece of trivia I found was 9 minutes and 29 seconds into the movie, the word Doom is spray-painted across some window somewhere.
Right.
I saw that.
Yeah. So maybe that's like that little hint, like, yeah, we like their first-person shooters.
The opening part, though, with... again, I'm going to call him... Lieutenant Brass from ER, or not ER, but CSI.
Lieutenant Brass.
Guilfoyle.
Oh, I like Paul that Guilfoyle. Guy. I like that guy a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, best I do too. But, but there is a whole, like, walking down the hallway, he's explaining everything that you're going to have to do. Mm-hmm. And there's the, you know, there's people walking by going the opposite way, and your head kind of follows them and then goes back to, it is such a video game trope that I, you know, it cracked me up. I had to write that down in the notes because it's the whole thing. Like, you're getting the first part of the game. You're getting introduced to what the storyline is. All right, well, we brought you in here because we got some civilians that need to be rescued at a school, and you're going to be paired up with so-and-so.
It's the first 5 minutes of Halo ODST or something.
Right.
It really is. You're totally dead on. That's exactly what they lifted here. And it's not, but it isn't a good one of those.
Even try your lights. Okay. Now look up. Now look down.
Totally,
look left.
Dude.
If you want to pick something up, press the square button. I was waiting for her to find like a barrel out in the wild where she'd shoot it, maybe get some health packs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I was actually surprised that again, so many things they start with in this movie and they never really continue with.
Yeah.
But it's because the script has a story. And it's not a bad story. I mean, it's tropey as all get out, right?
Yeah, but like, it can be fun.
And it's the most boring trope ever.
Sure.
Parent is willing to lie, is willing to kill to save family, and will sacrifice self to save family. Like, that's such a boring trope. Mm. But it's not a bad story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you had it all framed this one way, and then as the movie goes on, let's have a bunch of zombies in the gym. You know, okay.
I feel like they had about I feel like they had about 20 grand to work with, but someone had a bunch of had a bunch of friends. And that's the part I cannot figure out. How did you get Theon Greyjoy, the girl from Continuum, who's quite good on Continuum, by the way.
Yeah.
Who's also
Mickey Pfeiffer.
Yeah, I always forget her name. That's the guy. Yeah, that's the black dude. Okay. He's the guy from, like, you want to see him in a better zombie movie, watch the remake of Dawn of the Dead. Right. He's good in that. Like, there's quality actors. Mm-hmm. Even Missy Pyle, who's totally miscast here, but she's great in stuff she's in. And they're all together somehow.
The director or producer has something on each of these people.
Money. They just paid them.
I'm sorry.
These are all fine actors, but they got paid to make a movie.
Oh no, that's what I'm saying. They're fine actors. The only way they could have signed up for this is if it was blackmail.
Yeah. What was the money that they could have paid them?
A little more than money.
Like, yo, Theon Greyjoy, Alfie, what's your name? Hey, how about you? What are you doing right now? Well, I'm involved very heavily in filming constantly the most popular TV show on TV. Oh, could you please come do this with us? Yeah, I'll do that piece of shit for you. Like, somebody's friend. I'm telling you.
Okay, so let's go. Let's talk about him for a minute, because he was the worst thing in the movie for me.
He was really by far bad, really bad,
and it was because for whatever reason he was cast in a role where he had to put on this like urban street accent.
And that's like saying, yeah. Hey, by the way, calling him the worst thing in this is like saying the worst turd in that pile is the one that has peanuts in it.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. No, that's perfect. You are supporting my point.
Okay.
Yes, there's a pile of turds, and one of them has peanuts in it.
Yeah.
And that's asking a guy from London who has lived most of his life and worked, his brief life. He's a young guy.
Yeah.
In England to come pretend to be as though he's from the east side of LA, and it was horrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
For no reason. He could have been a British guy. Yeah. With the four of them.
Or it could have been any other actor who it could have been anything. It could have been me. I could have done it. Like, it's just bad, terrible, stupid, one note, two dimensional garbage.
But here's the thing about that role, that particular casting of Theon Greyjoy in that role. It's because they couldn't get Aaron Paul. Like, when Aaron Paul mm-hmm. is way out of your league, what does that say? You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Again, I'll never truly understand. Even the smaller role of the dude you mentioned from CSI, I always forget his name, that guy.
Guilfoyle.
Yeah, that guy. He's great in everything he's in, except this, I'd say. But how'd you even get him? Like, who's friends with who? I'm telling you,
CSI just ended, so he's free. Yeah.
That's true, but there's some story here. I don't know what it is. There's some weird story. The guy who made this thing is known for nothing but trash. Like, I don't know how he worked it out. Somebody got some friend to do a thing. Like, Hollywood's already this weird backdoor place that gets weird stuff done in weird ways. This movie's got to have some story behind it. And I'm not even interested in that. Like, that's how bad it is. Oh, and here's the beauty of it. It doesn't matter how much I rail on this movie today. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get a single email refuting it. Not one. Because it's so bad. Like, the comments on the message board, they're only going to be, well, quit picking movies you don't like then, or something like that. That's the worst it's going to get.
I really don't want to turn people off from looking at the movie a little bit. Like, I get the whole movie in the first 10 minutes.
Maybe. In the first 10 minutes would be a good, I don't know, you watch until the first zombie attack, and then you realize, oh, they saved a lot of money by not actually having zombie makeup.
Yeah, they just had people in their street clothes, barely dirty at all.
And that was actually the one little conceit that I love in this movie, and I wish there was more of in all the zombie things out there right now, was that there were people who weren't infected that were as dangerous to the rescuers as the zombies, because they just wanted to get out of the part of town they're stuck in.
Yeah. Have you never seen a season of The Walking Dead? Every season is based around the survivors are more dangerous than the zombies.
No, I haven't actually. But
we've talked about this.
Yeah, we did talk about this.
That little thing was really good, and they did nothing with it.
Yeah, I agree. It's actually, while Walking Dead has pounded it into the ground for sure, it's still kind of it's an idea that makes, actually, I think it's the reason Walking Dead works at all. It's the whole reason it's a show. If it was just survivors running from zombies, that's a boring ass show. What makes it interesting and made the comic interesting is that the people who survived to do terrible things to survive And so they're more dangerous than the other. So yes, it's a good idea that can be built upon. And they didn't here. They just sort of introduced it.
They had one scene.
Yeah.
One scene where a bunch of people who weren't necessarily infected set up a trap, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And then the woman who was the bait in the trap, her head explodes out the back for no reason. That was so weird. Can anyone explain?
No,
there was a gunshot beforehand, but they never showed. It was so much hand waving going on in this film. Like, oh, look over here. Oh, it's a trap.
Yeah. And also, by the way, wouldn't that woman, was she complicit in the trap?
Yes.
Okay. Because that was not made clear, because when she started moving forward and her foot was attached, she looked down as if she was surprised and kept making this horrified face of like, oh no, I've got to get out of here. I can't believe I'm here. What is this? Like, she didn't know she was trapped. I think at that point, when everyone's getting up and coming at you, if she's complicit, she should have probably changed her demeanor. Instead, she acted like the victim still, and it really bugged me. It took me out big time.
She has to be complicit because she's free of the disease, right? So there's no way that she's free of the disease if she's also stage one and trying to help other stage one people.
She also had laundry service and a shower somewhere because she was like the cleanest.
So she looked great.
She was the cleanest. Yeah, she showed up that day because she's friends with someone on the set and said, hey, just be hysterical and be tied to this thing, please. She said, okay. I mean, honestly, all that stuff kept taking me out of it. The throng of zombies, which was probably 15 people at any given time, they all were just the worst makeup, the lousiest. Like, maybe we're spoiled by things like Walking Dead, where they go into the prosthetics and have severed arms and faces are all jacked up. But, man, I didn't buy any of those.
Yeah,
things.
The reason there's zombie makeup is so you can tell the bad, evil survivors from the zombies.
Right.
It's like, oh, that one just shot a gun. I don't think they're a zombie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even sweater toilet man, I call him, who was sitting on the toilet in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Which was another, oh my gosh, I'm not even going to play the trope thing today, because just assume it's all a trope, everybody. Just this, everything we talk about is based on something you've seen before. But her, one stall at a time approach with the first person, that's just so typical. Anyway,
with no payoff.
Right.
That's actually something I want to praise the movie for.
Oh, Lord.
I want to praise the movie for no payoff at certain times. So there were two times, maybe more, but there were two times that really stand out to me where I was like, oh, he's going to attack her. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so glad her dead husband did not attack her. Mm-hmm. I am so freaking glad, because I was already overwhelmed with tropes, and to have my expectations not met was actually a pleasure.
Okay. I'll give you that. You know what? I'll give you that. That's true. The movie's so poorly made and handled and helmed that at the end of it, though, I'm not sure any of it was on purpose.
Like, that's the thing. You don't know if that cleverness was intentional or lazy.
Yeah. Like, to me, it's, we talked about this with Longest Yard, but it's like Adam Sandler filmmaking for me. There's a certain quality to his films that feel like he's just phoning it in or just kind of faking it or whatever. And that's how this felt. Like, moments like that were like, oh, maybe that was intentional. If that's true, wow, they really built you up and teased you all right at the end and then walked away, and that leaves you with some tension. But then I went, I don't know, maybe they're just shitty at this.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, this would be a great USC student film as far as, like, technical prowess. Like, all right, good job, you get an A because you figured out what makes a zombie film and you made sure to put all of those things into it.
Yeah.
But when you want to see something different, you tune into your fire up your Netflix and you want to see a zombie film that maybe breaks the mold.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't it. Doesn't do it.
No, this isn't it. It's not. Nope. Oh my gosh.
This is so mold. It's moldy.
Guys, I have a camera over here. It's called it's a Canon. I think it's a Canon Rebel 4SLI or whatever the hell it's called. I bet I could make a better movie with that camera.
What?
I'm telling you, Brian Dunaway, the quality of cinematography, if you want to call it that.
It's a true story.
It's some bullshit. Like, all of it.
You could. Yeah. Well, but I guess really the question comes down to, did you have a good time?
No.
I'm having a good time now.
I guess I can't go that route.
Well, we are having a good time now. Like, this is, would I ever sit through, I wouldn't have made it 5 minutes through this. And like, sometimes I'll sit down and go, I'm in the mood for some horror movie or something. I'm going to just watch one. I'll find something random and I'll watch it and go, oh, that was a pleasant surprise. Or, oh, this is terrible. I'm not going to watch any more than 5 minutes of this. And this was one of those where I absolutely would have checked out like 10 minutes in. Oh, yeah. Like you said, 10 minutes is about your point. However, knowing that we were going to talk about it, I was very, you know, I was like, all right, I'm all in on this. But I have to admit, the last 20 minutes, I don't know what happened there. I may have checked some emails and done some other shit.
You watched it yesterday?
Yeah, I always I usually watch them Friday night before today.
Okay, so yeah, so there was a massive distraction on the internet. Everybody was talking about the news. Yeah. Like I've never seen so much tweeting in my life. So I could understand kind of being a little distracted. I watched the movie twice.
You watched this twice? You watched this twice? Hold on. How did you watch this twice? Did you really watch this twice?
Yes, I watched it twice.
Lord.
Sometimes I will, but I couldn't go with it that time, Randy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
That's just
once was enough.
Two times.
I had to.
Once was too much.
I had to pick on anything. Like after the first watching, I really felt like I had no idea about the movie.
Mm. Yeah, there's nothing in a second viewing. I don't think there was any. Did you pick up anything new in the second viewing?
Tons of stuff.
Really?
Tons of stuff that I hadn't picked up. Like for example, the fact that the dad was dead and stayed dead, and I realized that. Because the movie ends with the mother sacrificing herself to save her daughter as far as she's concerned, we're left with ambiguity on that, right? We don't really know if everything was in vain or not. And, you know, everyone else she met dies to save this little girl. I realized if the dad had come, you know, had animated and attacked her and she had had to kill him or escape him or whatever, it would have made the ending even worse because that would have been the climax of the film instead of the very end where the mom gets shot.
Were they implying that he was in phase four, stage four, level four?
No, they
coma?
Were. They, no,
or
he
was
dead.
Implying that he was dead.
He was dead. Okay.
Yeah, he was dead. Like, right. He locked himself in a space where even once he got to stage five, he wouldn't survive. Like
he didn't look stage five. You have to get all bald and. Black eyed, right? Well,
apparently you also have to eat and drink or something because you know, like he starved to death or something.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, I wondered that too because he was in the fetal position and I just remembered that from the jail thing and I thought, well,
yeah. So, okay, I got a question.
Apparently you spoon.
Yeah, you spoon.
Stage four
is spooning.
That bothered me. The staging bothered me more than anything else in the film. I spent almost my entire time watching the film going, how do you graduate to the next cage? Is someone like sitting there looking at you going, okay, you're level two, move to the next, please.
Right.
You're level three, move to the next, please.
Right.
It's like, I had trouble with that. I'm like, how do you have different stage phase people in each one of the cages? It was bothersome.
Yeah.
Right. And what happens if, the stage three or stage five just died. All right, everybody, we got to move over and we need a new stage one.
Time to move. Time to rotate. Yep. Time to rotate the human bodies.
I like
time
that.
To go. That's a cool setup thing to do, right? Because you think, we're going to see nothing. And that was the big problem. It's like the only stage four people were people in the gymnasium.
Yeah.
Yep. Stage one and stage four and stage five, two and three, useless. There was no sense even having those other.
Yeah.
Two
there's
stages.
Too many stages for an audience to keep track of too. It's like, oh, wait, is this one stage two is they like coffee, but stage three they're.
Yeah. My greeting for you guys was almost I really wanted it to be a joke about, and now it's stage 63. The zombie starts to lift its left foot, but never its right.
It is based on the five stages of decomposition, right? Mm-hmm. So, but they, I don't know. It failed.
Are there really five stages of decomposition?
Yeah. It's funny because I mentioned game theory because that's one of the things that they talk about, the Walking Dead movie theory or film theory. They talk about the different stages of decomposition and how Walking Dead actually did a really good job of outlining the different stages of decay and how it applies to the zombies that you see on screen and where they are at in the extinction of zombies. And so it's really an interesting.
Nope.
Yes. Oh, Brian.
Oh, he's back. There you're back. You're back. It's all right. You got that sweet South Carolina internet. You're back though. You're back.
And Brian Dunaway, are you not in a hurricane right now? Internet.
Oh yeah, what's going on? You should. That's what's going on. Matthew's kicking your ass.
We're in. Right.
Hello.
And that's just fine. We're just fine with this.
He's out there in the eye.
Folks, we're going to have podcast evidence of the demise of Brian Dunaway on this episode.
Man, it probably is the storm now that I'm thinking. Save me. You're probably ISP storming it.
Save me.
Are you can you hear us in real time now?
Me.
Can you hear me? Is this me? Can you hear me? Are you good?
I can hear you guys.
Okay. All right, good. I feel bad. I hate it when people have bad internet. But hey, we're gonna zombie through.
While we're talking about Decay.
George Decay. Bye. Oh.
We just saw Dunaway again.
Oh, we did? Shit.
While we're talking about Decay,
yeah,
I couldn't stop thinking about the zombies and Reavers.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Zombies and Reavers?
Yeah. The difference. Reavers. Reavers are like.
The Reavers like Firefly Reavers?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did. They I got that zombies. Vibe. Yeah, I got that vibe. They're survivors who want to. I mean, again, this stuff is so. How do I put this? It is so. Already overdone on cable's most popular television show that it feels so second rate here and so low rent here.
But
yeah, like in because if you look at actual raw audience, if you look at raw audience on cable, Walking Dead has way more numbers than anybody right now.
Yeah.
So okay. So Walking Dead has this thing as the comic did where. It ranges though. It's like some people are subtly terrible to very terrible, awful, cannibalistic, whatever. No, I wouldn't say full Reaver, but the range is there in that show. And so people have already seen this in a more cohesive, sensible, better executed way than this. Like I can't imagine if you're a zombie, if you're a someone who enjoys the genre at all, and I do, this is not for you. This is just a piece of shit. This is just a thing on a plate that you shouldn't eat. It's just a thing you look at and go, ugh, that's gross. It's like a, you know what it is? It's like going to the worst river, most polluted river in America and finding someone's old dirty penis washed up on shore. That's what this movie is.
A dirty penis?
Yeah, like a dirty, shriveled, half decayed little severed penis. You don't know where it came from. That's what this reminds me of.
I want to know the story how it got here. I want to know it now.
Anyway, I don't know how it got here, but you know what I'm saying. And so can we make it official, though, that Retrograde can step down, brush the seat off, and turn its keys in? Because
I'm sorry. If you told me, and I just watched this movie twice, and if you told me I had to watch one of these two right now, I would watch Pandemic again.
Oh, no way.
I could probably name 10 movies off the top of my head that I would choose Pandemic over.
I might have to be on Randy's side in the fact that, yes, I think I would have more fun watching Pandemic and rolling my eyes than being bored watching Retrograde.
I mean, Retrograde was boring, but it at least had Dolph Lundgren and it at least had really corny acting and you could hear people's leather moving all the time. Like it had these things in it that were charming in a terrible way. This doesn't just has no charm, no wink and a nod, like nothing. Like nothing's funny. Nothing's truly terrifying. Nothing's just anything. It's just a bus. The shots of the streets are like, oh, here's the depleted, empty city where no one lives anymore. But we're only going to show you a camera angle that is like literally like, you know, a little bit ahead of the bus so that we can't quite show that everybody's working as normal off to the left here. Like it just, I just couldn't buy any of it. The one part at the beginning where they had some special effects, they had a burning city or, you know, LA was like on fire.
Yeah. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, dude.
Tops of the buildings burning.
Yeah. No offense, but my son, who is currently in a Adobe Premiere class, could have done better. Right. He could have done better, is all I'm saying.
Oh, you don't just have some random fires coming out of the tops of buildings.
Right.
And the bus. Was the bus that was on fire as well at one point in time?
There was one they passed.
Yeah.
It was the ambulance.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was terrible. Yeah. It was
really bad. Yeah, it was like...
there's definitely some after effects.
Yeah.
Yep.
But bad after effects.
Not even good after effects.
Yeah, and a reminder that this movie was made this year. It came out in 2016, so we're not talking about something from like 1995 with the low budget. Like, you can do a lot with a low budget today. There are people on YouTube that are blowing my mind daily with things they're doing with special effects. Oh. Like Wong guy.
Trachtenberg's portal thing is one of the greatest low budget fan film creations ever. And I can see why he got tapped for Cloverfield Lane and for
Black Mirror.
Black Mirror, the new Black Mirror.
Yeah. No, he deserved 100%. And guess what? I would watch 50 times more than this movie. I don't know how you could watch this twice. I mean, you're a trooper, and we salute you, and I hope this doesn't, you know, cause long term damage that you had
we
to sit through
you,
this
but
twice.
We also, in a way, want you to get some help.
Yeah.
I'm like my friend who's still playing Ingress after it's long after everybody else stopped and it's a bad idea. And
I've captured so many Ingress portals and no one's taken them from me.
What's great is once in a while when Pokemon Go was at the total height of the freak out craze a few months ago, in a while would be at a Pokestop which shares the Ingress portals, right? Because they're based on the exact same nodes. And you once in a while see a dude walking around with like his Galaxy S6 or whatever doing Ingress while all these other people are catching Pokemon, and it used to just crack me up. Yeah.
So I actually have some numbers here. Right. It's now 3 months since I started playing Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
I have captured over 2,000 wild Pokemon.
All right.
And I've hit over 2,800 Pokestops.
Oh, Lord.
Or I should say I've hit 14 Pokestops over 200 times each.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I need to take a look at what my numbers are. But Randy, are you currently wearing a Pokemon Go Plus?
Absolutely not. Do you think I'm a madman?
Well,
I'm currently
Brian's
wearing
a
Pokemon Go Plus.
Yeah, okay. Brian's a madman. Yes. Where did you see this data? Is it in the app?
Yeah. I was just looking at my achievements, the medals screen, and you got medals that are counting up.
Oh yeah. Okay. I've only collected 1,107 Pokemon.
I petered out a long time ago. I'm gonna get in real quick and just see here. I'll bet my numbers are far less than either of yours.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, trophy screen. There's a trophy screen.
It's you click on your little picture of your little avatar and then scroll down.
Hitting podcasting right now.
Oh, okay, here it is. No, this is good for live. People love live looking stuff up. Here we go. I've got 136. Oh no, wait. How do you know? Where do you know? How do you
Look at the collector badge.
Okay, the collector badge, I have 136 of 500. So I'm a terrible Pokemoner, and that's okay because I petered out hard. I don't care.
Yeah, that's all right.
Man, I've evolved more Pokemon than you've caught.
Right.
Yeah. So the number that impresses me the most for other people is the one under the word breeder, because that's how many eggs you've hatched.
Oh, yeah, not many for me. 39.
Mine is 73, and that's nothing compared to some people I know.
Yeah, a lot of people have done more than that. I've seen, but that's no small accomplishment. I would just say that. Every 100 of all the 136, though, for me, they were all Pidgeys. So that's important.
That's the thing.
This will come back when series 2 Pokemon get added in December, man.
Yeah.
It's perfect that we're talking about Pokemon Go because it is to actual games like Pandemic is to actual movies.
Oh, I see.
It's like it's like the idea of a video game, only missing the game part.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no game. Oh, you know what? That's funny you say that. What it reminded me of was those 90s Sega CD era live action video game things like Night Trap Sewer Shark, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what this is. It's like Wing Commander 1994 with Mark Hamill and other people in lion outfits or whatever the hell that game had. You remember that, right, Dunaway? They always had lion
absolutely.
People. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
What were they called?
That would have been a much better experience than this movie.
Yeah, it would have been. But what were they called? We watched the movie. We saw the... The Lionel? No.
The Lionels. That's what they were. The Lionels. Exactly what it was.
They perform in Vegas in the fall. They're great. The Lionels. All right. Anyway, I don't know where else to go with this thing.
Hide your Lionels.
Except I could say this. You know what? Here, all of them. All right, that's out of the way. What else?
I would love to go just go around the table real quick and name your favorite trope that this movie ruined.
Oh, all right. I like that.
Anybody have one?
Yeah, I think for me the one they ruined. I like a movie where everyone dies and things don't go well, and you know, in this case, they basically, because they had them confused. They thought the daughter was the mom and the mom was the daughter because she was out of her suit. They took the infected one in, which pretty much is going to mean the demise of everyone. They just don't know it yet. I think that was the idea. I like that idea, and it's been done pretty well in other movies. I've mentioned before that I'm a fan of Quarantine, the first Quarantine movie, which I guess is based on the Brazilian or some other, I can't remember where it was made, Argentinian film or whatever called... was it
Quarantino?
No, it was like Wreck or Record, or I don't remember. Anyway, that's kind of found footagey and similar. You know, shutting down the city, there's an infection, whatever. I think that one's handled really well, and nobody lives. It's a really bad ending. It's a bad ending for the people in it, but a good ending in my opinion, because it's a daring thing to do. It's hard to wipe out the people you've been rooting for and do it with glee, and at the end have the credits roll. So,
I feel like
that was something that usually works for me, and it was just badly handled here. And the heart and blood on this thing was the dumbest, shittiest, dumbest thing.
Come on.
That was so dumb.
She drew a heart with her own blood.
Yeah, that was dumb. That was super dumb. What are they going to do when they get in there? All I can think of is the technician who gets her in there and goes, all right, what do we got here? That was a heart made of blood on her face. How weird. Anyway, here, Bill, hand me the thing. Like, it's just so dumb. Everything about that ruined it. So there's your answer to your question. Trope got ruined for me.
I got to say, the trope that was most poorly handled was the fact that Theon Greyjoy could hotwire an ambulance, and you know he could hotwire anything, and he did at least take a little bit of time on the first ambulance. You know, it took him a couple of minutes. On the second one, he just basically jumped in and turned it on and was going.
Right. Well, he had practice on the first one, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, were there keys in the second one? Or something, but it really made me feel cheated.
He upgraded.
There were keys in the second one, by the way.
Oh, there were.
Were they? Then why was he hotwiring the first one?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how he hotwired the first one, but the second one, like, he just turned some keys.
He turned something. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, but for a movie that wants to borrow a billion tropes, why didn't they have the one where the keys are in the sun glare thing.
In the visor.
Yeah. I love that one.
Oh yeah. Right.
Love that one.
Never ever in my life have I stored keys in the visor, yet everybody who steals a car seems to find them there.
Yeah. Every movie.
I guess you keep them under the, Travelocity gnome in your front yard.
Yeah.
Right. Right by the front door. As close to the lock on the door as possible.
Didn't even Stranger Things had a scene where the people were keeping keys in their visor. Like everything, they all do it. I don't get it.
You used to do it during the 80s because no one thought of it. But we've seen so many movies now that you don't do it anymore. Well, I mean, you just don't.
Did they though? My parents never kept keys in the visor.
Hey, I work. I think it really is a trope that was handed down from people who work in construction, because
it's a trope that's been handed down from generation to generation.
Exactly. Actually, where I work at, we have a lot of worker guys who are out in the field a lot, and they drive these trucks, and they just do that kind of stuff. They will leave the keys in the ignition because it's not their truck, and you know, it's just like whatever. So I think that's kind of where that's kind of handed down from.
Yeah,
it actually happens, but not individuals with their own car. No.
Yeah. Good point. Brian Dunaway, Ibbot, was there a trope that was
spoiled for me? The all you have to do to take out a zombie is hit it in the head, right? Or puncture its head.
Yeah.
Unless you've got is a screwdriver, you go up through the chin and then you just kind of sit there for a few minutes.
Yep. That's called the Missy pile driver.
Well done.
Wow.
It's pretty good there. It's not bad, right?
You could have used that as a Twitter if you did the Twitter post.
Well, I'll be here all week, so it's fine. That was a good one. Dunaway, did you say one?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, did Randy say one? I can't remember if Randy said one. Randy, did you say one?
Mine, I just couldn't stop thinking about this in the movie. So the movie happens like next year, right?
Yeah.
So from when you're watching the movie to when the movie actually takes place, there's a year of things that have gone down, right? Mm-hmm. but somehow 20 years of decay to everything. The inside, like here we are. So we've turned this hospital into a thing. We came in here and spread slime all over all these walls, and nobody thought to clean them up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like what? How is this happening?
Yeah, that's
How does things decay so much in the very near future?
Oh, anybody? Listen, these are the bigger problems. Let me give you one that's the biggest problem of the entire film. I totally forgot about it. I'm glad I wrote a note down. How in the hell did that iPhone work the way she was working it? She goes in there
with her gloves on.
Yeah. Yes. Not only that, not just because you got to have the, you know, haptic touch or not haptic touch, whatever the hell it's called. The you got to have skin on. You got to have electrical contact with the phone. That's the way this technology works. Capacitive touch. That's it.
There it is. Yeah.
When she pulls the phone out, first of all, you're not gonna be able to do anything with it with your gloves on. Okay, well, let's forget about that for a minute. Let's pretend those gloves are like those kind you can buy in the winter that let you continue the capacitive through the thing. Sure. Let's just say that they are. She is just whacking a blank screen with her big, dumb thumbs, and a number comes up. I was so irritated, I just about kicked the screen. I was so bugged by that. And it's a small thing, but man, don't give me that shit. You're supposed to make me feel some feelings about you trying to get a hold of your kids after all this time. Give her another tactile button phone. Don't give her an iPhone.
Right.
And it was like an iPhone 3.
Yeah.
It wasn't even.
Scott wants to be able to feel the feelings, dadgummit.
I was in the bathroom. He was in the toilet playing Candy Crush and the zombie outbreak came.
He couldn't. He's like on a second gen 3G phone. He's like, he's playing. What was he playing then?
He was playing Snake.
Yeah, Snake or Sally Spa or some bullshit.
Right.
Like
she was throwing off phones too. She wouldn't keep any of them. She would just like used it, throw it away.
Right.
Yeah, they're all burned.
No batteries in that one.
They're all burned.
Yeah. You'll never find a charger when you need one.
No, but you can find one that still works and that you can make work through a giant suit and just mash the screen and a number will cohesively appear.
I actually wrote down the fact that the zombie on the toilet, the dead guy on the toilet, has an iPhone 3 lets you know he's been dead on that toilet for like 7 years.
Right. You know what was unrealistic as well?
What?
I don't remember nobody's phone number. You can't pick up somebody else's phone and call somebody you know.
Eh, your daughter's, though.
I don't know. I don't know my kids'
numbers. I know Tristan's. Right?
You do? Do you know it really for real?
I totally know it.
He would survive the zombie apocalypse.
I think I'd be able to call him and he'd be like, what?
Crazy true story.
I don't want to get up.
Just yesterday, I exchanged phone numbers with another parent, a woman whose kid is my kid's friend.
Hubba hubba.
Because we were going to, she wanted to text me about some PTA thing. Mm. So I exchanged phone numbers with her. We have the same phone number in different area codes, seven digits.
No that's way.
That's one like, in 10 million chance.
Right? Yeah, and it's like finding, seriously, that's you're like finding a lottery number or something.
Yeah. Number.
It was the weirdest thing, and I just kept going over it, like, seriously? This is your number?
Phone twins.
Yeah.
Yeah, bizarre. Wow, that's crazy. You know what's funny? I think it's cool. I think it's really admirable that Brian knows Tristan's number. I wish I knew my kids' numbers. Maybe it's because there's three, and there's no way in hell I'm remembering three of them.
If I had to remember three, probably be. And it's funny because as kids, you knew 20 phone numbers.
You had to.
All your friends, your parents, work numbers, and
Didn't have to. You didn't have some book you pulled out of your pocket and went, hold on, let me look that up. Like you knew all. In fact, I still know the number I had when I was a kid: 943-8492. I remember that number.
938-9801.
Yeah, see. What so a weird thing.
Not only are we past remembering everybody's phone numbers, we're losing everyone's email address memory. We don't even have that anymore.
Yeah, right.
There's a few you probably still know, but they're fading fast.
They are.
I'll just hold my phone up to you, have iPhoto pull up your name, and be like, oh, hey, Randy, how's it going?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
It is a weird thing that. I mean, it's just, I guess it's, our brains are now, can be busy doing something else instead of remembering numbers, but it's just an odd thing.
Back to the movie really quick. Can I bring up one more trope that I am so sick and tired of seeing? I've seen this trope so many times that I now expect it, but it's anybody standing in the middle of a street is going to get hit by a car that seems to not have their engine on.
Snuck up on. car.
Their lights on, nothing.
If it was a Prius, I'd be like, okay, maybe.
Yeah, like if a Tesla Model S that's running rampant through L.A. in this post-apocalyptic viral world.
But the fact that it's the taxi that they heard coming around the block in a different scene.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
pretty bad.
And this is a movie from 2016. Does anybody get run over by a taxi, or is it Uber?
Yeah, it's Uber.
It doesn't happen.
It's usually a bus. It's almost always a bus.
That's true.
There's a great supercut on YouTube of all the movies and TV shows in the past 3 years where somebody has walked into a street and got hit by a bus.
Yep. The one that sticks out for me.
And they had two buses on, you know, already rented.
They should have used a bus.
Yeah, right, you're totally right.
In this movie, the bus is from the 80s for whatever reason. Again, this is happening in 2017, but I realize it's because of budget. They couldn't actually afford to borrow someone's newer bus. Mm-hmm. But it's so weird how everything regressed. Mm-hmm.
Can you think of a worse vehicle to enter a suburban with zombies? Can you think of a worse vehicle than an all glass bus? It's nothing but almost practically just glass.
Yeah, no, it's bad.
And doors.
Oh, by the way, did you know the other reason I hated that bus is because they had so much of that fake blood on the front windshield to make it seem like they just mowed down a bunch of zombies. But mainly it was there. So, you wouldn't see. You'd be crashing. You need to see, right? You got to get, if you've got 2 inches of blood on your screen, your thing, you're going to clean that off. But it was mostly to just hide the fact that in a glass bus, I'm going to see traffic the day they film this.
No, in a glass bus, you're not going to see the inside of the warehouse where they're filming this.
Right.
Yeah.
And all the crew guys outside shaking the bus.
Exactly.
That's actually one of those things I'm giving the movie credit for. Ugh. By covering all the windows in mesh, it makes it really hard for me to see all your goofs.
Yeah.
That's smart filmmaking on a shoestring budget.
It is, but it's been done so much better before. Like
this Right, just... and when it makes no sense, like how could he drive this thing, then I don't know. I'm taken out of the movie.
All right. I mean, look, I like scrappy filmmaking. It's funny when Dunaway says all the crew guys outside the bus, and I'm thinking, yeah, that his brother-in-law, like one guy, there's a good dude out there who is the crew.
I'm going to give credit to that fancy restaurant I paid money to eat at, where I ordered Cornish game hen, and they made spam taste like Cornish game hen.
Yeah, give him credit.
Give him credit.
Credit where credit is due. Also, I want to mention something I think that should be offensive in movies. I don't know, maybe I'm not offended, but I felt like somebody might be offended. There's a scene where they're driving along and they're coming back to kind of civilization where people might exist that aren't infected. And they show streets lined with tents and people living under trash. And it's looking like, oh, okay, here's where the remnants of society are starting to be found again. And in my head, I went, nope, they drove down Skid Row and they took a picture of a bunch of actual homeless people and then they put a nice filter on it and they called that a scene. And that really kind of bugged me because it was like the cheapest, lamest way to get what they needed at the expense of some very downtrodden portions of society.
Yeah.
So it bothered me a little bit.
And then I'm okay with it, but then they go into a gym where a bunch of survivors have been holed up.
Yeah.
And someone's got a tent pitched inside the gym.
Yeah.
Who would pitch a tent inside a gym?
Listen, whenever we had co-ed stuff at gym, I was pitching tents every time we were in the gym.
Nice. Not that kind of tent.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Oh.
Okay, we've got that recorded. Scott Johnson can never run for president.
Actually, the tent was probably the conjugal visit tent. Well, we're going to be here in this gymnasium for a while. Principal Janice, do you want to...
No, they can see. I could still run for president. The difference is, I'm not in some closed space where I'm going, Randy, you should see the boners I used to get when I was younger. There's a difference. Anyway, all right, I have clips. You guys want to hear them? There's not many.
Yes.
Oh my, please, yes.
There's not many because I didn't find anything of that much interest to play. But I got some stuff here. So let's begin with the survivors.
What's in there?
That's what you bring the survivors. That's all you need to know.
Okay, that seems like a real short deal. Well, actually, if that's where you bring the survivors and that's all you need to know, then why'd you go on to explain that there are five different categories and they have all divided by this yellow line that was so easy not to get off of? Dumbass.
It would be great if there was a payoff for that if there's no payoff, then it's lazy, right? Like if they discovered at the end of the movie, she and her daughter end up in there and we see what happens in there.
Yeah. Then you could actually be saved at phase two or some kind of information that would actually be interesting.
Yeah. They're sacrificing the survivors to some queen zombie that's protecting the others people or something.
Anything. Right. At that point.
Yep. Don't set up rules in your movie. If you're not
going to save that for the sequel.
Yeah.
That's what I was curious about.
Oh no. Don't be curious. They're not doing a sequel. No way. No way.
Let's face it. Financially, this movie is on Netflix. They're getting Netflix money. It was a low budget film. So, I mean,
we don't know what Netflix, we don't know what that means though. You got to quantify what Netflix money means. Because this could be part of some distribution pile. Yeah. This could be a million things. Like, who knows? This isn't like something.
All right, we'll give you all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but you have to take Pandemic.
We'll see this now. Yeah.
No. All right, I'm gonna say that. Yeah, there's never ever gonna be a sequel. There never ever will be one.
I think there's gonna be 12 sequels now. Gonna be
straight to video.
Straight to video.
I don't think they ever do it. I can't believe it got made in the first. This never showed up in theaters, right? This couldn't have been in a movie.
Yeah, for like half a minute, right? I think it did.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Hold on.
I think for like half a second.
This because like, I'm willing.
Like three screens.
I got a $10 bill. I've literally laying right here that I will bet saying that this never made it into a single movie theater. That this was
no. I will take that $10 and I will. I will.
It's funny because somebody on IMDb asked that same question. Let me scroll back up here.
Yeah,
it was not in. It was not in theaters. It did not earn a dollar at the box office.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now that's different. Was it at theaters and didn't earn any money, or are you saying? Because that's two different things.
Well, you'd think. I think just the game of numbers, you'd have statistically at least one person would have seen it in a theater. Had to have, right? Like you
here we go. At a limited screening at the Fantasy Film Fest in Germany.
Yeah, but that's
not a limited screaming. I prefer that.
Limited screaming.
But see, that's just like showing up at some film festival.
I'm looking at the numbers.com and it's got a zero.
If that it's means a zero, it didn't go
sell a ticket in a movie theater.
Yeah. Being shown at a festival is different because most people aren't even buying a ticket. They're just attending the festival and paying bigger tickets. Anyway, all right. Well, Brian, you don't owe me anything, but if I would have lost, I would have paid you $10 in Steam credit.
I was going to bet you anything. I said I would take your $10.
I know I would, and that was my point. If I would have lost, I would have given you $10 on Steam to buy Left 4 Dead. Here's the other thing: Left 4 Dead 1 and 2, their opening sequences, which are rendered in game, and you're introduced to the characters. They're both better zombie movies than this. As small 5-minute vignettes, they're better than this movie. And they're actually quite good. Like you watch those and you go, oh, I get all of the stuff here. Here's the yokel from Oklahoma who's survived and he's kind of dumb or whatever. And here's Coach and he's this really cool African-American ex-high school coach who's got a big soft heart, but he's also a big tough guy and he's going to help make everybody survive. And then there's that Nick guy who is in the cash register in 5 minutes, already taking money. What's he going to spend on? Who knows? But he's wearing a white suit. Like all the stereotypes just coalesce around it and you feel good. And it's like a warm, welcoming, familiar place. This movie wants to be those things. It's not those things. It's like a ugly, smelly, weird place you don't want to be. All right, here's Theon is a jerk.
Why don't you focus on doing your own job, huh?
Okay, that's bad. That's real bad.
why couldn't Theon slow the bus down?
If it went lower, who do you want to, what do you?
Because the Wildcat was going to totally screw us.
Yeah. And what's, Dennis Hopper's going to lose his head in the subway later.
Pop quiz hotshot, why couldn't Alfie Allen slow the damn bus down?
No, I actually don't know. I think they were trying to set it up like, oh yeah, he and the other dude have a big conflict, and it's always a conflict until it's
the
not.
Clever names of Wheeler and Gunner.
Yeah.
Wheeler, real clever.
Gunner. Yeah. So
I was okay with that. I'm glad they didn't spend any more budget on trying to figure out better names.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that.
That's good. That was a quick meeting that one time when they talked about it. What do you want to? Something about eating?
Tell Greer we didn't find shit.
No, we have our destination. We're going downtown to St. Mary's. That's where 313 made their last call.
Where the fuck is 313, huh? Always bringing back of corpses.
Listen, St. Mary's is a supply drop. Do you want to eat? Does everyone want to eat?
Does everyone want to eat? I want to eat. Mm.
I don't know, but Pfeiffer was totally, he's our ringer here. He's the good actor. No, I hate that he didn't get.
He's a fine actor. Yeah. No, I like that guy. I like everyone outside of this. They're all fine mm-hmm. out of this. Like, that's the funny thing. Nobody here, I'm going, oh, what a waste of space that actor was or whatever. He should go back to his day job. Like, none of that. They're all good. All of them. But what are they doing? It's like a nightmare. Yeah. It's like a real life nightmare. How did you end up together in this? And how do you all feel about it? Do you keep in touch? Do people still do you have fond feelings about it? Right. Does Missy Pyle call Alfie Woodard once in a while and just go, or Alfie Woodard, that's not his name.
Whatever. Rachel Nichols. Yeah. Missy Pyle calls Rachel Nichols.
Yeah, and says, hey, what's up? Remember that good time we had in the bus? Oh, yeah, those are good times. Yeah.
Six months ago?
Yeah, this doesn't happen. I promise you. All right. Something about, I don't know what this is.
I'm the commanding officer, and I say we're going through Sherman Oaks.
Oh, yeah, that part just made me laugh. It's just a funny thing to say. I'm the commanding officer. And I say and we go through Sherman Oaks.
Like, they should have looked around at the suburbs of Los Angeles and picked one that doesn't sound so much like a mall.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good.
We're going through a shopping mall.
Yeah. Brian Ibbett, we got some audio from your prom date. Now, I want to warn people about this one. Usually it's innocent stuff like, you know, kiss at the door, out to dinner or whatever. But this piece of audio unearthed that your mom sent me is a little shocking. Apparently, you know, Brian and his girlfriend, they got a little amorous there at the end. And let's just say that Brian had a condom and it fell off.
It fell off.
Yeah. And she was upset. Oh, so then Brian said this.
Don't worry. I'll put it back on.
All right. That was a long way to go. It was a long way to go for that. Wow. I know.
The setup was better.
Wow. I'll put it back on was literally the clip.
Don't worry. I'll put it back on.
Oh, I apologize to everyone involved. All right. Here's more horrible, horrible acting by Theon Greyjoy. Who I really think is great in Game of Thrones. I want to make that clear. All right, here you go. Yeah.
Where the hell were you?
I'm the only one who knows how to drive this bitch. I ain't missing shit.
Wow. It is Jesse Pinkman. It is Theon Pinkman, yeah, basically, Theon Pinkman. Is what it is.
Yeah.
It's Jesse Greyjoy.
It's like that white kid you knew in school that was trying to be all rappy all the time.
Yes, yeah, right.
That's what it reminds me of. Here's some horrible dialogue.
Mom, is that you?
Yes, it's me. I'm here. Are you okay? Where are you? Are you at the house?
Yeah.
Ugh. Ugh. You guys, Retrograde is a better movie. I'm telling you right now. All right. Here's a weird whispery woman.
Just take him, please. He's not infected. That's great.
That's great.
That's great. Oh, he looks dead, though. All right. We got to go.
He looks dead, though.
Yeah. And Brian was right about her being the witch from Left 4 Dead. She was totally like a little witch there.
That sequence. By the way, that sequence is where I want to make my stand and say, so there's the thing in the movie that Scott was the most grossed out by, the clearly long dead baby.
No, for me, too prosthetic and fake. And the movie, the lead up, it didn't quite do it for me. The grossest thing for me was actually the two things I liked the most about the movie, and we haven't talked about them yet. So they were gross, but also well executed, literally. But when they would bash people's heads in and the kind of camera work they used there to make it seem real, it's pretty well done. Like that, I'm going to give them credit for that.
Let's just beat this honey-baked ham until pieces of it are falling all over the place.
Yeah, it was gnarly. Yeah. So that part grossed me out. But none of the normal like things that gross me out, like, ooh, their hands are dirty, or why would you touch your eye after that, or any of that? Like, none of that was in here.
Drinking water out of a squeezed out washcloth.
Okay.
Delicious.
You kind of got me there.
How about weren't you just so bothered by the pants on the dead guy in the toilet stall?
Yeah, that was pretty. Actually, being like, in a toilet stall like that, a public bathroom, especially a high school public bathroom, that grossed me out just because you're in there at all. Like, that's just, that place is hell.
I didn't understand how some of these people were dying because they weren't in phase four, which was the mode. They were actually dead, but from no clear wounds. Mm-hmm. So,
and they weren't decaying at all. Plus, that guy in the toilet, did he wall himself in there, or did someone else wall him in there with the plastic? Like, what was that about? Because the plastic,
who knows, because the plastic was taken down in parts. So somebody walled him in there with plastic, because you can't do that on the outside if you're on the inside very easily,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
And but somebody had to have opened it previously.
Maybe he died. Maybe he died early, and they were like, "Oh." Maybe they were like, "Hey, the guy that's install four over there died. We need to put up something to block his disease or whatever." I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking.
Well, he's playing Candy Crush too loud in there. Can we put some plastic up to cut down the noise?
Like I say about the dad,
phase three and a half diarrhea to death.
The movie wants to imply that you can just die and not actually become a zombie, mm-hmm. which right. it goes against a lot of zombie lore, right? Like in many, many other stories, if you die, you're going to become a zombie.
But not in the way it doesn't challenge it in a way that's adding a new wrinkle. It just felt like, oh, well, we don't know what the rules are, so forget about all that phase shit. This is just a dude dead on a toilet. Like, they just never... They never adhered to anything. I like it when something dumb like the Twilight movies, I like when they adhere to their mythology. When they go, all right, well, they're all sparkly when they're in the sun, and they don't actually die from that, or the mirror thing, or garlic thing, or bullcrap. But instead, at night, they do this. Like, I'm cool with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
gotta buy it.
But find something. Put your stake in the ground and freaking own it. Not just Toilet Man. Anyway, here's a grunty thing. That is a guy grunting.
Why?
I don't even know where that was from.
It was the one of the zombies. It was one of the Reaver style zombies that were running after him in the gym. Or as Brian Ibbett would say, the gymnasium.
The gymnasium.
Here's the final one. This is something about a bank.
Where the hell did you go?
I hid in a bank.
No, I'm gonna. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. I'm gonna keep that for future use.
Where the hell did you go?
I hid in a bank.
It's just something about that. I like.
All right. Good man.
I hid in a bank.
Yeah. You guys remember Yugos?
I had a Yugo. I've told you that story. That girl that was taller than me, that was beautiful, that I dated, and I usually had access to like a nice sports car, but my dad sold it, and I had to drive a Yugo, and the steering wheel came off in the middle of the date. Have I not told you that story? It popped right off, and we got like bailed into a curb, and I had to. It sucked. Oh, it was the worst night.
Now that would be a movie I'd watch. You trying to escape zombies in a Yugo with the really tall girl.
That thing was the biggest piece of crap.
Everybody can relate to that. You're not getting away in that Yugo.
Yeah, that was a. You know what? It was a very John Hughes kind of moment for me. It really was. She's 6 foot. Like, she was like 2 inches taller than me. Beautiful tan model like girl. She was beautiful and intimidated the shit out of me. I couldn't date her after this because she was just too tall. I couldn't do it. I know that's weird, but I just couldn't do it. And plus, I just felt like, why is she even dating me? And then in the middle of the date, everything's going okay, except we're both tall people crammed in this tiny can of a car. And then the steering wheel literally comes off.
So Seinfeldian, you know? It's.
It totally was. It was like a close talker. Can't deal with that man hands.
I can't date her. She's too tall.
She's a tall lady.
Big guy in a little car.
She was a Wendiggy.
Wendiggy.
All right, great. Let's now turn our attention to this right here, which is the checklist. Oh, man, the checklist this week is easy. This film is terrible. Check. Maybe the worst we've ever seen. Check. I'd eat hobo vomit before watching this again. Check. There's all three of those seem to be related.
But how did you really feel?
I let those words speak for themselves. All right. Star Trek connections. There's a tangential one if you count Missy Pyle because she's from Galaxy Quest. She was part of the aliens who helped us. We are so glad you're here.
Anyway. So then we also have Pat Healy.
Yeah, Pat Healy.
Who was in Enterprise.
Doctor. Mm-hmm.
Yep. In the episode In a Mirror, Darkly Part 2.
That guy was barely in this, but he's a compelling actor. He's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he's the doctor in this movie who finds her out.
Yeah.
And he loses it, accusing her of being horrible, and then tries to abandon her.
Right.
And so all he had to do was angry acting. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was pretty fun to watch.
But then our lead, Rachel Nichols, was in Star Trek 2009, the film, the major motion picture.
She was the green early love interest of James T. Kirk.
Right.
Green alien lady. So
Gala.
Yeah. Right? Is that her name, Gayla?
That was the name of the character that, that was a completely lost character. Like, she was, only existed to jump out of a bed.
Not lost in my mind. Gayla,
she looked more like a Granny Smith.
More like a Red Delicious, Brian. Anyway. Well, she was a green apple. What are we saying?
Exactly.
Yes, she was a green apple.
Brian got it.
Yeah. All right. We now do the walk with me, people, to the third window or the fourth stall. We're doing the Twitter post. This is where we sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's begin with Randy.
Pandemic, a first-person trope fest, the likes of which you haven't seen in many, many minutes.
Especially you. Saw it twice. Brian Dunaway.
Ah. Pandemic, like spooning with a phase 4 Scott, while phase 5, Randy plans to eat you when you get upgraded. Ooh. Meanwhile, phase 1 Ibbot is being phase 1 Ibbot.
Like he do. Like he do. Finally, Brian Ibbot.
15 characters on this one. Might be a record. Pandemic, the boring dead.
The boring dead. I like that.
Nailed it. That's exactly what this was.
Might be shorter than Shit Gratifter.
Yeah, pretty close. Pretty good. Still one of the best things you ever did. Oh, look at this. Alternative title, why bust this window in the chair when we can waste a precious gun shell on it? Or, what a waste of time. Our email today comes from David Cervera, I believe is how you say his name. He says this, I was so thrilled when I saw you were sacking the Addams Family. It has long been one of my favorite comedies. For those of you who liked it, we all liked it, didn't we? Mm-hmm. I think we
liked
did.
It.
Different degrees, but we all liked it. I really enjoyed it. I would definitely recommend you watch Addams Family Values. Now, this is where I and this listener, David, part ways. he says it is one of those rare cases where the sequel is better than the first movie. First, everything you liked about Christina Ricci in the first movie is turned up to 11 in the sequel. I'll give him that. She has a much bigger part. She owns every single scene she's in particular, an entire subplot where Wednesday and Pugsley are sent to summer camp. Second, Joan Cusack. I've always loved her movies, but in this one, she is my favorite. She is flat out amazing. Her monologue at the end of the film is an all-time classic. One bit of trivia in the New Yorker cartoons, Charles Addams had originally named the son Pubert, and it was changed to Pugsley for television because, well, Pubert.
I prefer Pubert.
Totally prefer Pubert.
I would take Pubert any day of the week and twice on Sunday. I remember really disliking Values, but maybe I just need to see it again. I don't know. I'm willing to admit.
Oh, that's the whole email?
Yeah, that's it. That's all of it.
Oh, it sounded like it was leading to a reversal. Like, so da-da-da, and da-da-da, but I want you to go kill yourself.
He likes it. You know, he likes it. He wants us to see it. So I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if we do it for the show or not.
I've seen it, but it's been a while. I don't remember much about it.
I remember critically it didn't do as well, but I don't remember why I didn't like it as much. It's been too long. And I'd forgotten about that camp thing, but now that you say that, you remember the show Numbers? With like the super genius crime solver kid dude that could, the guy that played the numbers kid.
What has happened at CBS? Go ahead.
I remember he was at the camp with Wednesday and Pugsley.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did a lot of small roles before he really did Numbers. He did I think a lot he was stuff. A kid. He's an interesting character.
Yeah, he's from the Serenity movie. He's the killed me with a sword, Mal. Or killed me, Mal. Killed me with a sword. That guy. The dude.
Mr. Universe.
Yeah, the internet man. That's that kid. I say kid. He's like 38 or something now, but at the time he was a kid. Anyway.
Have you guys caught the new MacGyver, new Odd Couple, or any of the other rehash crap CBS is doing now?
Lethal Weapon actually wasn't too bad.
Was that WB or is that CBS as well?
I want to say it might be NBC.
Well, CBS.
It's Hulu, whatever Hulu is.
What is that? CBS, NBC, Fox,
What is
WB, CW.
Google, it's Hulu?
Oh, Fox. It is Fox.
Oh, is it Fox?
As soon as you said Fox, I was like, oh, yeah, that is a Fox thing.
I'll tell you a show I watched on Fox that I am completely in on, and I don't know how long it's going to last, and I'm surprised I like it at all, but that Exorcist show?
Hmm.
Really good.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Like, it's not going to last, though. It reminds me of, like, Hannibal on NBC. Really, really good, based on an existing property you'd think would be terrible. It's not, and then it gets canceled because it's network TV.
Is it Gina Davis?
Yeah, she's great in it. And then this preacher dude, I don't know what the actor's name is, he's really good in it. It's great. It's surprisingly great.
I'm having trouble thinking of how far you could go with the storyline, though, because remember when they tried to do the Friday the 13th series and the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
Well, you can do a lot more here because there's a lot of intrigue about what does the church know and who knows whatever. And it's not just about one case. It's about like...
Right. So we're angels and demons in this.
A little bit. A little bit. I liked it. I was really surprised. I mean, I'm saying this with all genuine sincerity. I watched that thinking this is going to be dumb. I may not make it even through the first one. Totally did. Couldn't wait for the second one. Now I got to wait for the third. It's actually a series I'm going to follow. So you might check it out.
I'm watching Luke Cage.
And I hate the original. I hate the original Exorcist, by the way. I hate it.
Oh yeah, me too.
Freaks me out.
Speaking of TV that everybody's watching, anybody other than Brian Ibbett watching Survivor Millennials versus the Oldest People in the World?
No. No.
They're supposed to be Gen Xers, Randy.
Yeah.
The oldest people alive that we could find for this TV show. Like, can we stop with the? We don't need to keep reminding the audience that these people are ancient. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You didn't have a microwave growing up. You're so old.
Wait, people didn't have a microwave growing up in this?
No, I'm just giving you an example.
Oh, I thought you were being serious. I was about to have another.
People who remember rotary phones versus people who text with single characters for the words C and U.
Mm. Man, that sounds awful. I still
why are you bringing that into this, Randy? Why
why would I bring
it? Because I would like to know if you're enjoying it.
I am enjoying it. I actually still am enjoying this. I find, you know, like I said, I don't watch. There are only a handful of reality competition shows I watch. It's this Amazing Race and
Undercover Boss.
No, not even that's not. I don't watch that, but I wouldn't call it a competition. And Hell's Kitchen. Those are the only three I watch. Hell's Kitchen is a shit show. Yeah. No argument at all from me. It is exactly what Scott hates about reality shows is what it's the food that from which they make Hell's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always said you need for a reality show to be popular, you need abject humiliation. And yes. the ones that survive the longest survive. Seem to have a lot of humiliation in them. And
I think there's not as much humiliation in Amazing Race for sure.
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah.
Very little in Survivor.
No, I agree. They're more competitive.
I don't know. I'll watch it. But yeah, I'm sure there's a bunch of humiliation. That and you know, The Voice and the first few episodes of all those reality singing and dancing and talenting competitions is how much can we humiliate the people who come out on stage?
Are you excited about the idea that you might eventually get the Real Housewives of Denver, Colorado? Would you watch it then?
Could give a smaller poop. A smaller poop does not exist within me.
Just like a little, just to pinch off just a little nugget. That's it. Okay. All right. Oh, I forgot we had a whole nother email here. Sorry. Let me read this one real quick. Nate Ingersoll sent this in. Says, hey, Film Sackers, Scott, Brian, and Randy. In the Stand By Me episode, you guys were talking about vaping and e-cigs. Did you know the first patent for an e-cigarette was in 1965? Crazy, right? No. Thanks for the show. I've been there since Kroll, says Nate.
I didn't get my Popular Science from that year, so I can't say that I knew that.
But think about that. Like, what did that look
1965?
Like?
1965. That's crazy.
It must have been a beast, like a big old,
big old hookah-looking thing.
Yeah. I'm looking it up.
Volkswagen kind of thing.
Oh, actually, you know, you'd be surprised how modern it looks. I'm looking at the patent right now. Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, 1965. Mm-hmm. Here, I'll put this link in Skype so you guys can see it. It's interesting if you're into this sort of thing.
I'm just so glad that we got written an email from someone about vaping that didn't try to yell at us about it.
Yeah, I know. We usually get yelled
at. Cool, man.
Yeah, vapors are sensitive folk, I've learned.
That looks like a some sort of sexual torture device, doesn't it?
I agree. Like it's
this doesn't look that much different than these homemade vapes that I see some of my friends have.
Yeah, it's small. It's smaller and more compact than I would have figured in 65 for some reason.
It's kind of like insert penis here for the last time.
Right, exactly.
Are you tired of your penis?
By the way, who are the attorneys on this? It looks like McElpenny and McElpenny. It looks like one guy signed his name twice, doesn't it?
That's great.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
McElpenny, the law firm of McElpenny and McElpenny. They're here to help you. If you've been in an accident, call McElpenny and McElpenny Squared. Yeah.
Mahaney, Mahaney.
There you go.
The inventor is Herbert Gilbert. Nice. All right, good. This is fun.
Good times. What's our movie next week? I have no idea. Hopefully it's not a piece of shit. What do we got?
I'm here.
Next week, we're going to watch Nightbreed.
Okay. Oh, well.
Yes.
Now, it might be a piece of shit, but it's got a lot of... I'm ready for that. Yeah, it's got a pedigree.
Eisenberg, Clive Barker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't you guys will have a good time.
Yeah, I think
I enjoyed it. Okay. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
You've already watched
this? Oh, yeah. I'd watched this a couple of months ago when I first saw it on Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like the kind of thing that we will enjoy for, you know, it's a bad movie that we'll enjoy. I'm not worried about it at all.
And looking at this list, is there anybody besides David Cronenberg, who we've never really seen as an actor, is there anybody in here we'd recognize?
For Nightbreed?
I don't think so. No?
Hold on, I'm looking it up. Nightbreed, 1990. I mean, this continues the trend of movies. I have like a list. I should make an actual list, but a list of movies that I always remember seeing at Blockbuster or some home video place on a shelf and thought, ooh, tantalizing, and then never watched it. Nightbreed on that list.
This is the forgotten movie from the 90s that just recently was rediscovered. So there's a lot of interesting trivia on it.
To answer your question, I don't know who any of these people are, Brian.
Yeah. Hugh Quarshie is in was in episode one, The Phantom Menace.
Oh, right.
I'm trying to see who he is.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Captain Panaka. Okay.
Oh, okay. It's Captain Panaka.
The African-American guy with the eye patch.
Yeah, he wore leather. He's supposed to kind of be Han Solo-ish, but he wasn't very much.
Yeah.
And don't forget, this movie's 26 years old, so this is a whole other generation of actors.
Yeah.
Like pandemic level actors. But I'm really looking forward to watching this because I've never seen it, and it's got a score by Danny Elfman.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Oh, there is one guy in here I like, Craig Sheffer. He's the main dude. He was in A River Runs Through It. He was great in that. That's actually a really good movie.
All right.
Yeah. Did you guys ever see A River Runs Through It? It's a good movie.
Yeah, yes. Brad Pitt.
Yeah, it's got Brad Pitt, him, and...
Well, hold on a second. I think the winner for the best IMDb photo has to go to Doug Bradley, who looks like a Christmas ornament.
Yeah, and he's the Hellraiser man.
Pinhead.
He's Pinhead. Yeah. Oh, I'm all in on this then.
I'm loving this. I love that photo, though. That's like, Stan, no, you don't need to move to your left or to your right. That's a perfect shot right there.
That's good. Closing out your head, whatever.
Don't care. He's
listeners, listeners, please go to IMDb and look up the IMDb photo for Doug Bradley.
Yeah. They just got it. It's just like nailed it.
He's literally Pinhead. That's amazing. I can't wait to watch this. Oh,
yeah. He looks like a quest giver.
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, you kill me.
He does, because the little hook up there. That's
slow
amazing.
Slow clap. Yes, exactly.
Oh, hello. Help us
that's
rid
why
the land.
It looks like a Christmas ornament, but yeah.
Yeah. The Legion has invaded our town.
Doug didn't have much hair, but the hair he had was very impressive.
All right. Best ending of the show ever. All right, so be here next week, Nightbreed. Our Halloween extravaganza continues as we eke ourselves even closer to the great holiday. In the meantime, visit us on the web at filmsack.com. You can find ways to call us here by using this number I'm about to give you, 801-471-0462. Leave a voicemail for the show. We might just play it here. Or leave an email, filmsack@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @filmsack. And if you don't mind, leave us reviews wherever you find podcasts, because that helps us in ways that are difficult to describe. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
I'm going to go hide in the bank.
It's a terrible place to hide.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Well done.